On the topic of performance measurement, there are only three books I recommend to peers. By far, in my opinion, the very best on this topic, it's Transforming Performance Measurement by Dean Spitzer. My name is Mark Gandy with CFO Bookshelf, and we'll be hearing more about the good, the bad, and the potential of performance measurement in your business. That's coming up next here on CFO Bookshelf. When prepping for a conversation with an author, I do what you would probably do, and that's look at their LinkedIn profile. And I was intrigued to see that Dean worked at IBM for 13 years, and that led to my very first question. How did Dean get involved with performance measurement? And I was not expecting his response.
I started out actually in training and development and tried to improve organizational performance through training. And then I realized that training really doesn't do anything much. And so I moved into a field called human performance technology, but was still focused on the individual. And then I was wondering why that didn't really work, why I couldn't really make enduring changes in individual performance. And gradually, I realized that the problem was the larger performance system, which is the organization itself, preventing individuals from living up to their potential. I wrote a book many, many years ago called Super Motivation, a blueprint for energizing your organization from top to bottom. And in that book, I talked about the difficulty of motivating people. And the same thing is true with trying to train people. If you don't change the organizational system, then people are just going to be victims of the system. And so I gradually was looking for the holy grail of organizational performance. And I realized by the process of elimination that the key was measurement, because everything is based on measurement. What you measure is what you get. What you measure is what you manage. What you measure is what you reward. So I began to see measurement as that foundational decision-making control mechanism of organizations. So that's how I got into performance measurement. I'm actually not a measurement person at all. In fact, when I did my doctoral program, I did everything I could to avoid statistics classes.
Interesting. As I was looking at your LinkedIn profile, I think you worked in as a senior researcher at IBM. That was fascinating. What did you do in that role?
Yeah, well, actually, I was in IBM Learning Services, trying to focus on learning. And IBM Research got interested in the work that I was doing. So they asked me to come over and work in IBM Research. And there I was in charge of a research program that led to the book Transforming Performance Measurement about, how organizational change can occur only if we change the measurement system. And I called that program of research the socialization of measurement, because I found that no matter what you did with the technical aspects of measurement, it would never work unless you got people to adopt it, to be enthusiastic about measuring. You can't just impose it upon them. Otherwise, they're just going to play the game. And that's exactly what happens in performance measurement and performance management in their current incarnation.
Dean, this is more of a curiosity question. You said a few minutes ago you're looking for that holy grail, which led to measurement. I want to say it was in the 1990s. I don't know if it was the early or mid-1990s. The Balanced Scorecard came out first through an HBR article and then a book. Mm-hmm. So did some of your content, did some of your learnings come about before the Balanced Scorecard? And if the answer is yes, why do you think there was a gap? Why do you think not enough people were talking about measurement back then?
That's a really good point. Well, the Balanced Scorecard really responded to one great need, and that is the fact that measurement was purely technical in nature and didn't address some of the most important things about organizations, mainly people. And so the quadrant in the balanced scorecard, or the area in the balanced scorecard that focused on learning and innovation, was really the breakthrough that Kaplan and Norton came up with. So my book was actually after Kaplan and Norton, but it was to some extent a response to the fact that organizations like IBM were adopting the balanced scorecard without really understanding what it was all about and adopting it blindly. So IBM, for instance, would spend tens of millions of dollars implementing the balanced scorecard and really wasn't getting any benefit from it, other than a slight difference in perspective, putting more emphasis on measuring people, but still measuring in the wrong ways and measuring the wrong things.
We'll talk about this in a bit, Dean. To me, it sounds like IBM had some training, but they didn't have the education. So, but we'll come back to that in a minute. I do want to talk now about your book, and it's called Transforming Performance Measurement. And in my opinion, this is the best book ever on performance measurement. Now, if you're a high dopamine CEO or CFO that says, I just want to know how to do this, they might be disappointed. I say start with this book first, then read books like The Balanced Scorecard. But this book is very, very holistic. And first of all, just tell me a little bit about how this book came about, maybe who the audience is. So take us back to maybe a year to 2 years before you wrote this book, and then when it became an idea and then came to fruition.
Well, I just saw so many organizations investing hundreds of millions of dollars in scorecards and, the technical aspects of performance measurement, the measures themselves, the measurement process, the technical infrastructure. And the problem was that people didn't know how to use them. So they were putting the same old measures into automated systems, expecting to get a different result. That's what Einstein said was the indicator of insanity, is, doing the same thing and expecting different results. So I realized that people didn't know how to use measurement systems. And because I saw measurement as the foundation of organizational effectiveness, because what you measure is what you get, if people are ignorant about it, they're just going to blindly measure whatever they happen to see in front of them. And usually the unimportant things, the small things that are easy to measure. And so that's really how my book came about. And, I saw that you can come up with measurement systems that will get your organization to a basic level of performance management. But if you want outstanding management and outstanding organizational performance, I saw there being four factors that you have to address. And the book is essentially about those four factors, though there's a lot else in the book. The first factor is context.
Right.
To create an environment that fosters the positive use of measurement. Now, we can talk more about that later when we talk about dysfunctional measurement, but essentially, measurement can be used negatively or positively. And most of the time it's used negatively against people. We'll talk more about that. So context is the first factor, creating an environment that fosters positive measurement. The second factor is focusing on the right things. And the right things are those that drive optimal value. The book talks a lot about value creation, and we can talk more about that later, but it's not focusing on the process or the inputs or even the outputs. It's focusing on what is driving the real value that the organization creates for its stakeholders. The third factor is integration, aligning measurement and value creation across the entire organization. Too many organizations are misaligned, as you well know, where different functions have different measurement systems. You know, I've looked at hundreds of organizations, and almost every organization has a different measurement system for finance, for research, for sales, for marketing, for operations, for the support functions. So each organization each function within the organization is operating based on its own measurement system. And the only organization-wide measurement system tends to be the finance-oriented ones. And so I saw a real problem with misalignment and lack of integration within the organization. And if the pieces of the organization aren't working together for the common good, then we know what happens. There's tremendous dysfunction. Each function is trying to suboptimize itself, and it's really a mess. And the fourth factor is interactivity, to create the right dialogue around measurement that promotes value creation, learning, and continuous improvement, so that people are carrying they're not just responding like rats to a measure. They're actually creating a measurement system, improving the measurement system, dialoguing about measurement, and that's what creates and then that goes back to context, creating a positive environment. So it's those four factors that serve as the foundational truth of the book. And quite frankly, you know, in the last 10 years, nobody has really been able to contradict those four factors as being the critical success factors for an effective measurement system.
May I rant for a little bit?
Please.
I guarantee you, my sample size is small. My sample size of my client base, we never start out with these questions. That is, the CEOs will start saying, as we said a few minutes ago, I want this dashboard or I want those numbers. We never start with context first. And I love, by the way, integration, that third pillar. But I'm reminded of an old story. It's, I don't know where he got it, but it's, I've heard it from Dan Sullivan multiple times. He's with the strategic coach, and I may not tell it as well as he does, but the Mongolian plumbing story goes all the way back to World War II. So the Russians would have Mongolians fight on the front line, and then after the war was over, you know, what do soldiers do after a war is over? They plunder. Well, the Mongolians loved the enemy's bathroom fixtures. They were just amazed. And it's like, we've got to take these back to our villages, the showers, the tubs, the sinks. It was beautiful. So they take it back to their village. They put all the fixtures in their huts. And then they brought everyone in the village and said, come look at this. And they'd go to turn on the faucet. And you're smiling, Dean. Nothing.
No water. Huh?
No water. There's no water. So they had the fixtures, but not the plumbing. And in my opinion, those four keys, those four pillars, you just gave us the plumbing. Whereas a lot of these CEOs I work with, even CFOs, are guilty of, we want the fixtures, but they don't understand the plumbing. So I feel free to use that story, because I think that fits with these four pillars.
Yeah, that, you know, to me, one of the greatest stories is one that's fairly recent, Wells Fargo.
Yes.
Where what they did was they measured and incented sales to the exclusion of other factors that are so important in the bank, and didn't do it around a value creation model. Do it, you know, it was totally sales driven, out of context and totally unintegrated. And we know what happened to the bank. It, you know, it really hurt its reputation. It hurt its long-term performance. It was devastating. And of course, there are thousands of examples of organizations that that get into that problem. If you don't understand what value you're creating and what the value creation process is, you're always going to get into trouble. So it isn't the measurement. It's what we should be measuring that's most important. And that, to me, is the essence of focus, is, you know, what is really important to this organization or your organization, and what is going to really pay off long-term for our customers and other stakeholders.
Great point. Can we unpack just a little bit? Because in the first, I can't remember if it's the second chapter, it's early in the book, but you talk about the dark side of measurement. Can you, and I want people to hear this, can you explain your definition of the dark side of measurement? Again, you may be kind of repeating, I apologize, but just take it from there.
Well, the dark side of measurement is simply measuring the wrong things, and often doing so for the wrong reasons. So you can manipulate people to do almost anything, you know, including that Mongolian plumbing story, which is a good one. But I mean, you know, to me, the Wells Fargo being so recent is such a great example. We see that in government every day, where people don't have a big picture. You know, look at all the relief programs and entitlement programs that are aimed at addressing a specific aspect of the problem, not the whole problem. And so it ends up causing big problems, you know, like, you know, we can spend money, we can stop digging ourselves into a hole, but we can often dig ourselves into a bigger hole when it comes to debt. So that's why, to me, the most important thing is to understand your value creation model.
You said earlier, when you were looking for that holy grail, before that, you talked about technology. A few weeks ago, we were talking to Bob Stahl. He is a pioneer in the S&OP world, sales and operations planning. And he mentioned what's called the 10-30-60 rule. And he says any change program that you enter into, part of the success comes from technology, but it only results in 10% of the success. 30% is the processes, the system, the learning, the hard aspects. The final 60% is change behaviors, which in my opinion is why this is such a good book. Your book is really about that 60%. Would you agree that technology is not the main thing when it comes to performance measurement?
Oh, absolutely. And I alluded to that earlier when I was talking about the investment in the measurement system.
Right.
Like probably 90% of the investment is in the technical infrastructure, and there's hardly any investment in developing the measurement process, improving, training people, motivating people, creating the right attitudes about measurement, developing capabilities, measurement education, communications around measurement. What is the purpose of measurement? And then the real missing link in measurement is measurement leadership. There's no measurement leadership. It's often delegated to the technical people. I've never seen an organization that had a chief measurement officer.
Intriguing.
That's totally correct. And I talk a lot about the social and organizational factors relating to measurement. And if you try to implement a technical infrastructure or a technical measurement system without addressing those social enablers, the system is not going to last and it's not going to be well used.
Who would be that ideal chief performance officer in the organization? even though it may not be a title per se, but who would be that person for any size of business?
Well, in my book, I actually advocate having a separate position for a chief measurement right. officer. I think if you're aligned with any particular function, you're going to give inadvertently a preferential treatment to that function. And you're not going to see things holistically.
And obviously that person needs to be involved in all parts of the business. They can't just have the silo mentality or this functional mentality. They're going to be right. absorbed in all parts of the organization, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, I got a great quote for you that this is one of my favorite quotes by Michael Hammer in The Agenda, his book of The Agenda. An organization's measurement systems typically deliver a blizzard of nearly meaningless data that quantifies practically everything in sight, no matter how unimportant, that is devoid of any particular rhyme or reason, that is so voluminous as to be unusable, that is delivered so late as to be virtually useless, and then languishes in printouts and briefing books without being put to any significant purpose. In short, measurement is a mess.
I would agree. I do agree with that. It reminds me of something of one of our future guests, Laura Cesare. She's a supply chain expert, has over 300,000 followers on LinkedIn. She said, Mark, sometimes I'll see or observe some of these supply chain or supply base businesses. They may have 50, 60 more metrics, way, way too many. And I don't know if Michael is addressing that, but would you say it's also true that there could also be too many measures or metrics?
Oh, absolutely. In my book, I talk about the need for a critical few transformational measures. I don't even use the term metric. And many of those measures can be qualitative, not just quantitative. And that's one of the mistakes that we make. We focus on the things that are easiest to quantify. I actually believe that the most powerful measures are often the ones that employees can self-assess. And we can talk more about that later. But to me, the qualitative measurement is so powerful. And that, you know, the biggest issue that we have is, you know, again, we measure the things that are easy to measure, and we don't measure some of the most important things. Now, let me give you some examples.
You're already giving me an idea of one of them. And okay. As you're typing, can I just jump in and share one?
Sure.
Net Promoter Score. It is so easy to measure on a scale of 1 to 10. It's, in my opinion, it's too hard, and you should be looking how engaged are your customers or clients already with your product or services. They're not measuring the things that are a lot harder. That's one example. But
the problem with the Net Promoter Score, it doesn't tell you very much that's actionable.
Exactly.
So it can only really be used by a highly mature organization that's basically looking for confirmation that they're doing the right things.
Right.
And one of the things I talk about in the book is the difference between exploratory measurement and confirmatory measurement.
Excellent.
To me, exploratory measurement is much more important because that's what's going to make the organization more intelligent and increase what I call organizational wisdom. Now, let me give you an example of some of the difficult to measure things. All of them can be measured. And in my book, I have plans for measuring each of these, as well as many, many more things like relationships, customer experience, service quality, employee engagement, alliances, organizational ecosystem, partnerships, brands, trust, speed, flexibility and agility, collaboration, employee involvement, talent, innovation, ethics, intellectual capital, structural capital, leadership, reputation, culture, sustainability, knowledge sharing, customer value, networking, et cetera, et cetera. You know, those are all, I'm you can't measure everything, but whatever is important to your value creation process, we ought to try to measure those things. And quite frankly, if we get employees talking together about how we measure those things and what they really are, which is prerequisite to measurement, it's going to be amazing the kind of dialogue and intelligence that's going to permeate the organization.
You said something where my antenna shot up. Well, they're already up, everything you're saying, but you said something that it was outstanding. You said something about self-assessment. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I'm wanting to lose weight, I'm going to use my own measurement numbers, maybe how many calories I'm consuming a day, how much sleep I'm getting per night, you know, how many days am I working out? I'm using those numbers for self-assessment. I don't need someone else to beat me on the head and saying, you're not performing well. So it's a true statement. It's a true statement that we need numbers where we can self-assess how we're performing, right?
That's a good point. But the important thing is we ought to be assessing the leading indicators rather than the lagging indicators.
Exactly.
So, you know, we don't want to manage weight because you can't manage
weight. You can't manage it.
Just like you can't manage health, you can just manage the indicators or the drivers of health.
Right.
So we need to look at what results we want to achieve and then how we drive those results. And unfortunately, what we do too much in organizations is we try to manage the results.
Great
like
point.
We try to manage profit directly, or we use some blunt instruments to manage profit, like just indiscriminately cutting cost. And that will increase profit, but again, it will have very detrimental effects on the rest of the organization if it's done poorly.
In the book, I thought this was brilliant. You talked about the performance measurement maturity. I'm going to use the word model, the performance measurement maturity model. What does that mean?
Okay. Well, you know, most of what I talk about in the book is about measurement maturity. So an organization is not mature just when it measures. It's got to do measurement right. So what I look at are the factors relating to context, focus, integration, and interactivity. So what are the indicators of each of those? Because that's what's going to tell you whether the organization is mature in its measurement. But the things that to me tell me that an organization is immature from a measurement perspective is if they're over investing in the technology and under investing in the people.
And near the last third or last fourth of the book, you get into transformational measurement. Can you give me some examples? What do you mean by transformational measurement?
Organizations need to transform themselves. And so transformational measurement is really two things. It's measuring things that will be truly transformational to the organization in terms of advancing its value proposition and creating more value for customers and other stakeholders, which is the reason why the organizations exist. The other aspect of transformational measurement is doing things that transform the organization internally, such as what you were talking about, is organizations that are mature, are doing the right things, are focusing on the people aspects rather than purely the numbers. So to me, there's transformation that happens within the organization, but the most important thing is focusing on the right thing. So to me, what I'm looking for is the critical few measures that are going to advance value for the stakeholders of the organization and do so in a way that actually transforms the way the organization does business. One of my favorite examples is Southwest Airlines, you know, who revolutionized air travel by focusing essentially on one key metric. Do you remember what that was?
Turnaround time.
Turnaround time. Very good. Yep. And it was amazing what that did. It dramatically cut down the time between flights and therefore the efficiency of using aircraft. But to me, what was most transformational about that is that it got people working together. I don't know, it's not so true today because of all the restrictions on air travel. But if you remember the way it was when Southwest Airlines first started using that, what would happen is the pilots, the flight attendants, everybody would work together to turn those aircraft around. And so you'd have the co-pilot helping to clean the aircraft and stuff like that. It was pretty amazing. And people, the ground crew, working together cross-functionally to make things happen. So to me, not only is turnaround time the perfect example of a transformational measure, but it's a perfect example of a cross-functional measure that gets people working together for the common good.
And that's a great case study because you go back to context, you go back to focus. I think that turnaround time, it led to one type of plane model or one type of engine. It led to a business model that was very focused. They're not in every single market, are they? And nope. And so the type of his employees that they hires, that's a great example.
But the other thing, Mark, that Herb Kelleher said that I thought was powerful, you know, he was the CEO at that time of Southwest Airlines. He said, any airline can copy the tangibles, but they can't copy the intangibles. So to me, there are two things that made Southwest Airlines so unique and different. One was the turnaround time, the speed, but the other was the way that the staff related with the customers and their customer service mentality and things like that. And so those were really the two factors that Southwest Airlines measured and managed to create their great success. And even today, they are still the great airline success story.
You have a subpoint as you're talking about transformational measurement. One of your subpoints reminds me of a book written a number of years ago by Jill Pine, The Experience Economy. You talk about transactions versus experiences. And I was smiling from ear to ear going through that. I'm going to assume, Dean, that again, because it's easy, we tend to want to measure transactions versus experiences.
That's such a great point.
Right or wrong?
Absolutely right. And the perfect example of that is measuring customer satisfaction. You talked about the Net Promoter Score, which is essentially a measure of customer satisfaction. Customer satisfaction is transactional. And it's usually done at a point in time. So it doesn't really give you any indication of how to improve the overall customer experience. That's why I feel so strongly about customer experience being so important, because what it does is it measures the end-to-end cycle from initial contact with the customer to the lifetime value with the customer. It's really quite amazing. So if you look at customer experience as being that life cycle of your relationship with the customer, that's really, really powerful, as opposed to a point in time, which is customer satisfaction.
One of the ways the sausage is made on this podcast is I like to give an interview arc to everyone in advance so that I don't want there to be any surprises. Well, as I'm listening to you, and we could have this conversation all day, as I was thinking about something, I thought, I wonder if Dean will mind if I throw him a little bit of a curveball. Let's make up, not a fictitious company, but let's take some small business that maybe Amazon has purchased over the years. I know of one company, it's called diapers.com, and guess what? The only thing you can buy from them is diapers. But let's pretend like they're a small company still, and let's say they're only doing $50 million, $60 million in business, and they're going through the motions. They get orders, they ship. They get orders, they ship. Obviously, they have to have vendors, get vendors on board. If Dean is brought in and the leadership just says something's lacking here, What would be your starting point? What would be your starting point in helping them to start introducing measurement into the business so that there can be some transformation?
Yeah, the starting point would be to get them to define their value that they provide to their customers and other stakeholders. So do a value delivery or value creation assessment, because that has to precede everything else. You know, business and any organization, is even government organizations, are about providing value. And so if you don't understand the value you're providing, then measurement is probably going to be dysfunctional, because it's going to end up undermining the value model. So I come up with a value model, and then what is most critical to measure within that value model? So we got a value, you know, I've got a great model that I use. I call it the IPU model. And it's inputs, process, outputs, and outcomes. And the only outcomes that exist in a organizational measurement system is value. So the outcomes or the impact are the value. Even outputs, which are number of units produced or number of units sold, unless the customers use that well, that's just a cost. And we know so many examples of companies that generate lots of output but don't produce much value. So to me, the focus should always be on outcomes and value. And then you can work backwards and say, based on that value that we want to create, then what are the outputs we need to produce? What is the process? And then what are the inputs? But what we tend to do is we tend to measure the inputs, the process, and the outputs, because they're all easy to measure and you don't have to think about them.
Great point. I need some advice. So I'm going to use you. We're going to switch roles here. I'm going to get some advice from you. So I do work with companies, small businesses, generally about $100 million in revenue and lower. And I've helped many put together either A, gain sharing plans, which have been around since the dawn of time, profit sharing plans. A lot of CEOs, they love the concept of profit sharing plans. And what ends up happening sometimes, and I think you know how this is going to end, is so much focus every meeting is on profit. And then if we hit these profit, we're sharing, as opposed to it just being part of the compensation model.
Yep.
How can we get businesses to think better or get the right mindset about profit sharing plans? And I think you probably have a couple of good suggestions or ideas or examples.
Sure. The purpose of a business is not to produce a profit. Profit is an indicator of business success, right? But short-term profit often isn't. So I would look again at the value model. How is value being created? And incidentally, one of those value elements may be profit. But let me give you an example of how dysfunctional it can be. When I started at IBM, this was during IBM's heyday, and IBM was making lots and lots of money, and I was so fortunate to be part of a successful company.
1970s, 80s, roughly?
Well, actually, this was around the early 1990s. Okay. So this was after Lou Gerstner had done his magic.
Got it.
And turned the company around. And this was the reborn IBM, the new lean and mean and very profitable IBM. But what was so funny is that the first year I worked there, I was making a pretty good salary. I was very happy. I'd just come from academia. So I had, been really shocked at the salary they offered. And then at the end of the year, I was given a profit sharing statement where my bonus was, I think, over $30,000.
And you're probably thinking, how did I earn this?
Exactly. And that's what the discussion among the employees was, exactly that. Okay, we're not going to give the money back, but you know, what was our contribution to that? It was just because the company did well. And so we were actually cynical about receiving those checks. And it didn't really have any motivational value whatsoever. So the important thing is, when you reward employees, make sure that employees understand what they did that contributed to that excellent performance. And, you know, you mentioned earlier when we were talking the difference between performance management that is used in performance appraisal and real performance management. To me, real performance management is about optimizing the performance of the organization as a whole, not about getting employees to do what you want to do. And unfortunately, most times we talk about performance management, it's about individual managing individual performance, manipulating employees, and then kind of hoping that that applies to the organization as a whole. To me, you know, what my book is about, what performance measurement should be about, what we've been talking about is optimizing value creation for the organization as a whole, not manipulating or managing individual employees. And of course, you know, remember W. Edwards Deming called performance appraisal one of the great demotivators in organizations.
Right.
It's horrible the way it's used. And no matter how you put lipstick on the pig, it's still a pig.
You are a person, a man of humility, but I'm still going to say it anyway. This is the best book on performance measurement ever written, period, bar none, in the story. But what would be some other books? I do have a list, but do you have some other recommended reading for anyone who wants to dive deeper and wider in this topic?
Yeah, you're setting me up to show that I'm not humble.
Sorry.
But honestly, you know, if you don't do the basic value creation right, then it doesn't matter. So, you know, I would say that my book is the foundation, and then anything that you can read on value creation, because that's what the whole story is about. It's all about creating value for customers and other stakeholders. So I honestly don't have any books off the top of my head that I would recommend, other than the ones that you've suggested, like Stacey Barr's books and, the Balanced Scorecard, you know, is a good classic. But there really, honestly, has not been a heck of a lot written about performance measurement, especially not this big picture approach to performance measurement.
And you and I are in a space where if they existed, we'd find them. So let me go through my list, if it's okay.
Sure.
And I'm going to add one on the fly. So as we were talking before we started recording, you've used the word value. I'm going to have to count how many times you use the word value, which is great. I'm thinking of Steve Blank. Steve is a guy I could just listen to all day. He's an expert in the lean startup world. And his thing is, we're in business to provide value. So you have to create value. You have to deliver value. You have to capture value. So he's all about value creation, which is outstanding. So I would say anything by Steve, his writing is just phenomenal. But some of my other reads are The Tyranny of Metrics. And when I first read that book, Dean, I'll be transparent with you. I was looking more for a how-to book, and I got through the first chapter. It's like, no, I don't like this. But I had the wrong mindset. And then I started it again, and I couldn't put it down. It's like, this is outstanding. I would say that's more of a book of what not to do and focuses more on the dark side of measurement, which you do a great job of explaining in the first 3 or 4 chapters. We've mentioned Stacey Barr. She's from Australia, and we plan to have her on. And one of her books is Practical Performance Measurement. Enough people in this country, I don't think, know her name. And I hope to change that. Any book by Donald Wheeler, Understanding Variation, is to me a mind bender if the mind is open. And I would then say read the balanced scorecard again, but this time in the context of after reading your book. And then we talked about this name earlier. He's more tactical, but I think he would completely be in alignment with everything you teach. And that's Mark Graben. He's written Measures of Success. It's good. It's practical. Again, he focuses more on the tactics versus the people, the 60%, but that's my short list. But again, there's not that the depth, the quality is just not there when it comes to performance measurement.
But you mentioned something very important there, and Wheeler and Graben particularly deal with that, and that's the concept of variation.
Yes.
And I talk about that as well, and it's so important to understand that there is going to be variation in any system. And, you know, we were talking about profit and sales and things like that. You know, you're going to have profits and sales that are going to go up and down. All kinds of things are going to vary naturally because there's so much variation built into all systems. What we've got to be careful about is when we have trouble with things, not to overreact to those problems, or when things are going well, just like at IBM, you know, all ships rise with the tide. So what good is it to reward people for the fact that the tide's rising? What is that going to do? So to me, what's so important is to understand the people or the socialization of measurement, and then looking at measurement in an organizational context, an organization-wide context. And the problem with a lot of the statistical stuff is it looks at variation out of context.
Great point. If you don't mind, by the way, time flies. It seems like we just started, but again, you can never retire. But what in this season of life, what are you doing now, Dean?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah, what I'm spending a lot of time these days on is trying to create more of a legacy for the future. So I'm working totally pro bono for churches, Bible colleges. I'm on the board of advisors and a visiting professor at a new Bible college in Nepal. I teach at Karis Bible College in Colorado. And I do a lot of remote consulting for churches and colleges, mostly in the spiritual arena. And in fact, you know, we talked about self-assessment. One of the things that I just developed was a Christian maturity assessment. And, because a long time ago, a guy who was the CEO of Andrew Womack Ministries, which is a pretty big ministry, said to me, the biggest problem in Christianity is we measure the wrong things, like people sitting in pews as opposed to people going out and spreading the gospel. So to me, what is so important is, again, measuring the right things, determining what creates value, and also measuring the leading indicators rather than the lagging indicators. So my Christian maturity assessment is about the leading indicators or the drivers of Christian maturity.
Dean, this is an honor, and I was nervous coming into this conversation. You took care of that immediately. So again, thank you for your time.
And thank you, Mark, for your preparation and for the excellent interview. I really appreciate it. I really have enjoyed it. And I hope your listeners have gotten some value out of it.
That's Dean Spitzer, the author of Transforming Performance Measurement. Again, Dean, thank you very much. I have a feeling this is not the last we've heard from you on this show. Again, thank you for listening. Don't forget to check out CFObookshelf.com. Check out the recent bookmarks page where you can get reading ideas each week. I'm Mark Gandy for CFO Bookshelf.